This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
No matter what you're looking for in a non-alcoholic beer, there's only one name that has it all. Athletic Brewing Co. Full flavor? It's athletic. Huge variety? It's athletic. Award-winning styles you can get online, at the bar, or the grocery store? It's athletic. In fact, when it comes to amazing non-alcoholic beer, there's no question. It's athletic. Ask for it and find out. Go to askforathletic.com to find your closest retailer today. Near beer.
Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. Let us help you escape your mind.
All right, folks, welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. We have episode number 199 today. We are joined by our friend and colleague, Lee Adams, and we are going to be discussing his new book, Visionary Guide to Lucid Dreaming, which everybody should check out. I have the link down below the video. I really highly recommend it. If you're into dreaming, dream analysis, lucid dreaming, all that kind of stuff, it's an amazing reference for that. So go check that out. Again, the link is down below the video. And before we get started, head on over to patreon.com/mindescapepodcast. For just $2 a month, you'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments. We have a bunch of stuff on there. We have even one from Lee not that long ago when he was on, when we were talking about Indra's web. And that's like a whole another catalog of episodes. So go check that out on our Patreon. And we're probably going to do one at the end of the episode today. So look for that. And one more thing, head on over to indrasweb.org. It is live. This is the social media platform that we created to connect open minds. So whether you're talking about lucid dreaming or UAPs or ancient knowledge, whatever it is, head on over there, and it's the perfect place to speculate, hypothesize, theorize, all that kind of stuff. So, but without further ado, welcome back on the show, Lee.
Thanks for having me. It's always
Thanks
a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us.
Of course, this is, I mean, we had you on not that long ago, but I think this is your seventh time on the show.
Yeah.
I think that's the most out of any guest.
You're probably the most frequent guest. Maybe Chris, our buddy Chris Emerson early on was on more, but he hasn't been on in a while. But yeah, that's got to be some kind of record.
Not like taking your skate off and stabbing somebody, but you know.
Running out of things to talk about with you guys. I'm just kidding. I feel like we're all friends, so it's kind of fun to see you guys again and have a conversation, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I was excited for you too. Your book, it's been doing pretty well. I've been seeing you making the rounds on the podcast, and I read it, and I really enjoyed it. We talked a little bit about it last time you were on, but I told you we'd get you back on when it was released. And so why don't you give us a little bit of a feeling, like, how does it feel to, like, publish your first book and kind of get it? Seriously, like, I mean, because I imagine it's pretty exciting on some level.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long process to get anything like that out into the public, especially if you go through a publisher, because, you know, they edit it and re-edit it and re-edit it again to make sure that all the spelling and grammar is kind of fixed as much as they can, because they don't want to be, you know, putting out something that looks like trash. So that was a big process. But I mean, you know, the getting that specific book, I don't know about other people's books, you know, because I really don't talk to a lot of authors out there. But getting that book was really challenging to get out because, first of all, my spelling and grammar is pretty much probably equivalent to like a fifth grader's.
No, you're selling yourself short. I thought it was really pretty. It was really well written, I thought. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I had a lot of help, you know.
But you were very like concise, I thought, in like what you were trying to say. I didn't feel like at any point you were like, it was just kind of confusing. You know what I'm saying? Like you were very clear on like what the message was you're trying to get across.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote like a rough draft of what I wanted out there, and then rewrote it again, and then had a editor assist me in rewriting it again, you know, so that it made sense to somebody that just picked up the book without actually having any knowledge of mine. You know, like it's like anything that you write, if you look down at it and you're like, oh yes, this makes sense, and then you give it to your, like your significant other and they read it, they're like, I don't have a clue what the hell you're talking about, you know.
Yeah.
It's like and I found a lot of like self-published books were like that, you know, as well as even books that I was reading sometimes that I, you know, was through a publisher. It's like, what are they saying? You know, like I have no idea. And so I really didn't want to repeat that. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time working with other people to say, hey, you know, like, here's my writing. Does this make sense to you? And they're like, no. And then I'd have to go back and rechange it or, you know, get some comments and feedback from them and be like, well, this is what I was trying to get at. Is there a better way of saying it? So, you know, in that sense, I really felt like the book kind of took on its own life, you know, because I wouldn't say that it's all my words. It's kind of a group activity, you know, like
right.
I take the credit, you know, it's like any inventor in a way, you know, you take the credit of the work of the other people behind you kind of, and the people that provided the research prior to you and everything. And then you're like, here I am, this is my stuff, you know, but really I want to make it very clear to people that a lot of people came before me. A lot of people helped me and assist me in like understanding the dream experiences and the states I had. You know, I reference like Jung a lot in there, as well as Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey, Robert Wagner, Ryan Hurd, Stephen LeBerg, all these different people that have really, I think, paved the way prior to me and really inspired me to see dreams and experiences like that in a different way that really could help people. But where I found lacking in a lot of previous books that I've read, and also the reason why I really wanted to write something, you know, unique, you know, is because I found what was lacking is that these people assist people in having these experiences, but they kind of leave them like high and dry at that point. They're like, okay, now you have the experiences, see ya,
right.
You know, and it's like, what, you know, like, what am I going to do with this? You know, it's like you essentially have superpowers, but go figure out how to like use your superpowers, you know,
right.
And hopefully you don't like cause any damage to yourself or others in the process. You know, it's like, that's not a very good mentor, I don't think. So, you know, I've struggled a lot with my own personal dream experiences and what they kind of mean to me. And primarily like reflecting with Ryan Hurd, who I call my mentor and friend, and he gave me a lot of feedback on like how to look at dreams in a different way and how to kind of use the dream experience to kind of help yourself and change who you are and like listen to the dream and create this mythology, a personal myth. Ryan, you know, he said that about my book, and I didn't even really recognize that in my book until he said that. Is essentially what I'm trying to do is extend the dream experience more and make it so it's more meaningful for people, and say this isn't something that you just analyze and put in a little box or anything like that. It's like building a conversation with your dreams and like actually trying to listen to them and try to treat them as if they're like essentially another personality, another person or consciousness that you're interacting with and then learning from it, you know, or you know, figuring out what the world is. I think it's filled full of positive and negative, say, consciousnesses, and that the more you interact with them, the more you realize that this is a very vibrant, full, active world inside, you could call it inside your mind, right? And it's so massive that it's essentially something that you know, it's not something to put in a box, and that's what I'm getting at, I think. So, you know, my book took it from, it definitely has the basic stuff in there of saying like, and also more advanced stuff saying like, oh, this is what you do to have these experiences. This is how you like improve your sleep so you can have experiences like that. But then pretty much the second half of the book is talking about how to use those experiences to interact with the dream in a different way than is typical. Jung, you know, kind of tried to do that, I think, with his work. And so I found that really important too, is I don't necessarily like use Jungian techniques in order to explore my dreams or encourage people to do that. But what I do try to encourage people to do is kind of look at dreams from a Jungian perspective, as in he listened to people and he took their experiences as something real, not just fantasy. And he found reason behind people's experiences versus just things coming out of nothing, you know, and or insanity caused from just nothing, you know. Like, he found that these people had something to say and there was a reason behind what they were saying. And so, you know, if you do that, if you take people's experiences and your own experiences as something important, and maybe there's meaning in it, and you try to engage with that, I think you find meaning in it. You know, you really find this deep meaning that typically is just completely ignored by modernity, right? So I think that's the most positive aspect of that book, you know. But back to your question, you know, like, it took a long time to write that. It's a simple book. It's easy to read on purpose because I didn't really want to make it something so confusing to the average person that they couldn't pick it up and be like, oh yeah, you know, like, I had these same experiences. You know, most books that you pick up, you're like, I have no idea what this author is trying to say. These are so complicated concepts that, like, I can't really even, you know, even approach it. And
I like when authors like work up to, like, I like the complicated stuff, but I like when it's like starts off like if you started going, like, this was a series and you started with your book now, that would be like a good first book. And then you could go into some of the Jungian stuff or some of the more complicated aspects of it. I think that's the way to do it, is to create like a series in a way where you put the first one out, people can kind of get used to it, and then you build off of that and it becomes more complex.
Yeah. Well, I would say that my book actually is very complex in the sense that it's not complex to read, but I ask very hard questions that I would hope that somebody would reflect on for the rest of their life. One of the first chapter, I think, is why are you having these? Why are you trying to have this experience? You know, and that's pretty like right in your face. It's like, okay, you want to have lucid dreams? Tell me why. You know, and that's not an easy thing to explain. You know, it's like, well, I want to, you know, have some cool thing. It's like, well, why? You know,
right.
It's essentially like just using why in order to get to the source of the question, you know. And I think somebody could spend the rest of their life really asking themselves that, you know, or any why to what they do, anything. You know, it's like, well, okay, I'm interested in boats, let's say, right? Well, why are you interested in boats? Well, you know, and you keep asking, and eventually, like, the person really kind of loses their reasoning. They're like, well, I don't know why I'm doing this, you know?
Right.
It's kind of like an unconscious action that I'm just trying, interested in, you know? I don't understand that. So the whole point of that question is to really reflect on all things in your life and say, well, why am I actually doing these things, you know? And so just, you know, that's chapter one. And it's a basic thing. It's not complicated to tell somebody, you know, those things, be like, hey, why are you doing this? But in the sense, it's a super complex, deep question that I don't think anybody can really answer. And that's kind of the point. And then explores consciousness and so on. You know, it's like,
right,
what is consciousness? Well, there's all I don't say, well, consciousness is this. You know, I say, these are all the different aspects of consciousness. And nobody knows the answer to really what consciousness is. So, you know, that's an ongoing question too. And it builds off of that into, you know, it kind of confuses the person on purpose to say, hey, you don't really know what's going on here, but, you know, and then here's, you can have these deep, really challenging experiences through just lucid dreams. And then it takes it and says, okay, now you have these complex experiences. Now this is how you can engage with those experiences and start learning from them as, you know, anecdotal experiences, right? You learn from the experience itself rather than going to the research and saying, hey, you know, like, when am I having dream states? You know, I'm in REM or whatever. I'm treating it more like what we're doing right now. We're having a conversation, right? If you read my book and you know, you're like, okay, I read Lee's book. I've gone through every letter. I know exactly what Lee's thinking, you know, and then you have a conversation with me. You're like, no, I'm going to tell you who you are, you know? And I'm like, right. Dude, you don't know who I am. Let's have a conversation. Let's sit down and talk about it. You know, there's a lot more information and knowledge exchanged in that conversation versus saying, oh, okay, you know, I know what dreams are. I know what every experience is because the research says this. It's just random noise, you know? It's like, no. I'm treating it as if you're treating the dream state like a person, a personality that you can have a conversation with and you can learn. And that's really the true, I think the true knowledge, the real knowledge is in that. It's not in, you know, dissecting the dreams and like, pulling apart like how many times you saw a snake or whatever, you know. It's yeah. Like having the conversation.
Well, let's point out too, because I'm sure there's some people that are like, lucid dreams, oh yeah, I know what that is, I have it all the time. There's a different, I think most people think of lucid dreams is what they're really thinking is having a vivid dream, right? Yeah. Like there's a lot of people that like I talk about with this where they're like, oh, it's, you know, yeah, I had a very memorable dream, you know, I know what that is. It's lucid dreaming is you're actually aware or have some alertness of, you know, your day-to-day consciousness within your dream. So you can change things, manipulate things, kind of alter things in that regard because you're alert to what's going on. So I just wanted to point that out to some of our listeners.
Yeah. Who are probably... I define lucid dreaming very basically. I think I've told this on your show before, but lucid dreaming is essentially just having some form of awareness in the dream space. And that include, you know, varying degrees of awareness, and also like, you know, I include out of body experiences and astral projection, all that stuff into a lucid dream state because you, in those states, you have some form of personal awareness. You're like, I'm in a dream, or I'm having some type of experience, and I kind of has some concept of who I am in this experience versus just being in. The dream, I kind of, a good analogy is like, you know, driving a car. Sometimes you can drive the car and get to work without even knowing that you're in the car or driving or what happened during the experience of driving your car. And then sometimes
in your own head, right?
Yeah.
Well,
and then sometimes
repeatable thing that...
yeah, well, dreams are, you know, the same thing. It's very repeatable. We do it every night multiple times, so we're not really aware of it. And then sometimes, you know, you're driving the car and somebody slams on the brakes and you're like, whoa, I'm back in the car, you know, and then you're aware that you're driving. And it's kind of the same thing as being present in the dream experience, you know, being aware versus just being being along for the ride. And so there's, you know, there's something to be said about being aware all the time, you know, in those experiences, but there's also, it's also important to not be aware too, you know. Like driving cars, right. Like that. So,
and the most,
do you have any step-by-step instructions in the book on how to achieve better lucid dreams?
Yeah, so I stick to science in that aspect. There's lots of different ways to have lucid dream experiences, right? And sometimes it's just it happens naturally to people. But really, I stick to like the most effective ways based on peer-reviewed research, which is. Wake back to bed and the mild technique. Those are really supported by research. The other techniques may be more effective in some ways for other people, but I stuck to the most effective ways based on the research so that most people could have the experience. And it's been that way for me too. You know, I try to keep things simple, you know, KISS, keep it simple, stupid, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes that's the most effective way to do anything. And so I tried to really keep it simple for people, but I also talk about like supplements and other more advanced techniques that people can use to kind of up their game if they choose to, you know. And I've gone through, I probably spent years like going through all the different ways that people have said to have the most effective lucid dreams, and really like, you know, some of them worked, you know, but consistently it was kind of hit or miss for a lot of them. So I went back to the basics, you know, and just said, okay, these are the ones that are consistently effective. If you stick to them, you know, just do this and you'll be good. And hopefully, you know, people take that in the book, you know. and run with it.
Yeah, the most effective one for sure is the wake back to bed. So, I mean, for me, I always wake up at like 3 or 4, have to go to the bathroom real quick. And then when I go back to bed, if I was either in a dream or not, like in the deep sleep, and then I fall back asleep, I most times have some sort of a lucid dream. And I think I told you this, I felt like when I got better at meditating, lucid dreaming became easier to like get into that state.
Yeah. I mean, that would be like what I call awareness training, right? Like reality checks, which essentially is like checking to see if you're dreaming or not throughout the day. The way that they're effective is it's really bringing awareness to reality. It's saying, okay, I want to be present. I want to be aware during my waking life. So when I'm in a dream state, I want to be present. I want to be aware, you know? So you kind of, what you do in the day affects your dreams, and what affects your dreams affects your waking life too. So if you want to bring lucidity to the dream experience, then spend your life being more aware of the activities that you're doing during the day, such as like driving the car. Really pay attention to the environment, what's happening to you, the sensations of acceleration and deceleration, the sensations of getting angry at the driver, you know, in front of you or behind you or whatever, the smells, the tactile sensations of the car, the radio, you know, how the emotional impact of the sounds and stuff like that, all that stuff. Really try to be present and aware. And the more that you do that, the more that it will affect your dreams, bringing some form of awareness to it. You mentioned like the aspect of control in the dream experience too, you know, and I don't necessarily include that into lucid dreams at all. That's kind of an individual, you know.
I should say that's not all the time either. That's, yeah. It does happen sometimes, but it's not like a regular thing. And I don't even know how you control. I don't know how you get to that though either, right? Like, when it's there, you know how to do it, but it's like it's not something that happens regularly.
Yeah. So the reason that control is such an interesting thing in waking life as well as in dream life is typically there's layers of control, right? So you may be like, oh, I'm in control of my own life, you know, but then you have like political activities or limitations by your money and things like that, while you're awake, that control your waking reality, you know, like confine you into who you are, and you can't really do a lot of things that you may want to do, you know. Also, like rules and stuff like that, you know, you get prison time if you murder someone. So obviously, like, that's, you're not going to go murder people,
right?
Or, you know, ethical and stuff like that too. So like the level of control that you have wake is kind of limited by that. You have this illusion of control really in your life. And the same thing goes for lucid dreams. You know, there's always this hype, this sense of awareness that creates the dream space, right? I call it like the narrator. And the narrator kind of is just like a narrator of a movie. There's or a director, right? There's the actors, they're playing a part, they have a screenplay, you know, the script, and the director is like, hey, move here, move there, or whatever. And they're kind of directing the show. The actors aren't actually in control of anything as such, maybe like improv on some words they say, right? But the audience sees it as, you know, this thing, or the actor is like the important one and all this stuff, but really they're not. The dream space is kind of the same thing. It's like you're always having this world that is generated around you, and the world includes like sensations, it includes memories of things that you've never done before. You know, you may be a completely different person. It may seem totally normal and natural. The characters around you, you know, they're involved and invested into the story that's happening around you. And, you know, all the senses and the emotional impacts of those senses too are generated by the dream world. So, you know, the question becomes of how can you become aware of a dream, you know? Is the narrator the thing that controls the dream and controls the memories even on the most part? Is that the thing that actually gives you lucidity, or is it you that gives you lucidity, right?
Right.
There becomes this problem. You're like, oh my God, am I even aware in my dream, you know? Like, or is that like just this dream playing a trick on me almost, you know, and saying, oh yes, you're now aware, you know, and it's like, oh, I'm aware.
I think it can come and go though too, right? Because I've had like bad dreams where I tell myself in the dream towards like a middle part, or if I want it to stop, like, you're dreaming, wake up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I think you can jump into that too. It's not something that you start the dream aware and you can control it. I think it's something that also comes and goes throughout the dream.
Oh yeah. I've had dreams where I'm lucid in the beginning of it and then I lose lucidity throughout it. You know, I start playing the character again kind of, and eventually just forget that I'm actually like me, you know,
right,
and go along with it. That's pretty common with most people that have lucid dreams, or the other way around. You could be, you know, halfway through your dream or whatever, and then suddenly you're like, whoa, I'm dreaming, you know, like,
right.
Whoa, you know, something crazy happens. You're like, whoa.
Right.
But like, the interesting part is like, okay, say I'm practicing lucid dreaming. And I'm like, okay, if I see, you know, if I see a clock or something like that, then I know I'm going to be lucid dreaming. So I'm sitting there and I'm in my dream. And then suddenly, you know, this clock just appears out of nowhere. I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm dreaming. It's like, well, who made the clock? You know, like,
right.
Somebody, something made this clock appear. And it knew that if I saw a clock, I would be aware. And then it's like, here you go. You know, now you're aware. And you're like, well, I did it, you know. But really, it's like the thing behind yourself, the unconscious, you could call it, you know, is like, hey, I'm going to make a clock for Lee, you know, and let him think that he's like aware. Another thing is like this interesting idea that I've had recently is about like memory and how, you know, it affects you in a dream. It's like, some people, including a good friend of mine, and I've had this, have had dreams where they last a long time, right? Like almost seemingly years, and you're in the dream experience. And it definitely lasts, the memory of the dream experiences lasts a lot longer than the actual time that you're asleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
So say you're asleep for 15 minutes, but the dream experience extends for much longer than 15 minutes, you know? So how does that happen? You know, it's not time restricted.
Right.
It's not restricted by real time. What I'm thinking is happening is memories aren't based on time. So, and this is, you know, supported by dream experiences where you get into the dream and then suddenly you have memories of, you know, a long time of who you are and what you're doing in the dream, and everything seems natural. But no time has gone by. It just started, you know, and you're like, oh, I'm fully this character in this dream and I don't have any concept of like me anymore or anything. And so like, to me, it seems like dreams are or memories are kind of almost implanted into you, and you experience as if it's, you know, been going on for a long time. So like you wake up and you have all the like, say a dream actually only lasts for like a second, right?
Right.
And you wake up and you have this memory of like this long experience where you were lucid in a dream and all these things happened, right? But like the real time that you were actually having the dream experiences is only a moment of time, you know? It's like, well, what was that all about? You know, it's like a fabricated experience that never really happened, quote, happened, you know, in real time, you know?
Right.
So I think that's
I think your point about the memory stuff's interesting though, because I was thinking about that too. I actually was going to bring that up. I've been having like, I had like a weird dream kind of about like where I grew up and stuff like that, but everything was different. It wasn't like the same. It was just all like altered in like different ways. It had the same feeling of like home and the area and everything, but like the structures and everything weren't the same structures. It was, you know, like how we think of like, oh, the house I grew up in or whatever. It's like stuff like that is like just altered in different ways. So in that realm, I just have been thinking it's so bizarre. Like, how do we construct these new structures? Do we take pieces of stuff that we already know and put it together in our minds? Or is this really some other like multiverse thing happening? Like, what's happening where we can create things that didn't exist, that I've never even thought about some of these places in terms of like the structure and things like that.
Right. Well, you know, back to the memory thing real quick, and then I'll jump on that one. So the memory thing's interesting. I've had dreams where I literally have dream characters that they play as a psychologist, right? And in the real-time dream experience, you know, as far as I know, they tell me that they can remove my memories or give me new memories. And they do it. They show me. And it's absolutely terrifying because in real time, I'll have a memory of something. And then the psychologist removed that memory. And I'm like, I don't know what that was anymore, you know? And I'm like, I knew that I had a memory, but then it's gone. I can't recall anything. So it's like having, you know, Alzheimer's or something like that instantly. And it's like, and they're like, I can control your memories, so don't F with me, you know? And it's like, whoa, dude, you like, right. You know.
So these are like entities. These are like.
Yeah, they're dream characters, you know, entities, whatever you want to call them. They seem to have a little bit more dream control than me. And they're like, I'm going to remove your memory, you know, and you're like, what? And they're like, and it's gone. Or I'm going to implant a memory in you. They tell me ahead of time and then they give me a new memory. And it's like, I never did that. You know, I know that I never did that. That wasn't something that happened in my waking life. I'm aware at this point, you know, and they're just like, bloop. And then suddenly I have a new memory of my past that never existed. I'm like, what the,
you know? In these dreams, are you your body? Like, can you look down and see your body and stuff? Because all of my dreams, or I should say most, maybe there's not all, but it's like a first person, almost like I'm in a video game walking around. It's just my consciousness. There's no body. There's no, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I have looked down at my body again, you know, and I've seen my hands and stuff. But again, like, it, you know, it's like, why did I look down to my body? Why did I have arms and legs at that time? Because other times, if I recall my dreams, I never look down, and it seemingly just is like a first person point.
That's usually what I have. Yeah.
And you're like looking around and you're like, you know, and you don't see my hands or anything. I'm just kind of like looking around, like, you know, weird. Like, and so it's hard to know, like, if I have a body, if I don't have a body. It doesn't make sense that you kind of have a body in your dream. So going back to your, like, your house dream, or you're going back to the old memories of your house and stuff, and things were different. You know, that's kind of where, like, scientists and researchers get this idea that random dreams are just random noise, you know? They're like, oh, you just dream about the things that happened in your life and, like, or happened that day, and it's just random.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be my actual house that I'm having a dream of then? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, right. I have a good memory from day-to-day consciousness in the sense that I do remember things. Like, I could tell you what room and what was little, you know, divots on the wall and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying?
Think, well, they're full of shit. Let's just get, let's get to the conclusion here. They're full of shit. So it takes a tremendous amount of energy to make any story, right? Like, if you're awake and you're sitting there typing out a script, it takes a tremendous amount of mental energy to sit there and create this, like, the story. And then you imagine, like, the complexity of a dream experience. There's a tremendous amount of energy that goes into create this, like, sometimes very well narrated story, you know, like, there's a beginning, sometimes there's an end,
right?
There's like conclusions, there's like drama, it follows like the same theme as a movie and everything. And then, like, you know, and you learn something in it that you've never known before, all this stuff. And it's like, this shit's not random. But what I think is the misunderstanding is that dreams seem to take material from our waking reality, and it modifies it in such a way to convey a very important story. So, you know, I treat everything as symbols, especially in dream states. And what I mean by that is, like, symbols are simplified images, you know, emotional responses, sounds, senses, things like that, that convey a story to you, a very complex thing. So it's like an icon that expresses a very complex mechanism behind it, something that you can't possibly understand. But the symbol itself you can relate to, and you can actually use that to understand something, right? That these complex things are actually trying to express through you. So, like, if you know, your house and everything that you've ever experienced is actually symbolic. So your house is symbolic because the house itself is, you know, it has tons of information behind it that really, that we with our senses can't really comprehend, right? Like, we sense it, we say, oh, this is my house, but the house is like a very complex thing, right?
Well, it's symbolic for home. Like, home could be many different places. It's like a feeling.
Right. The shape of your house, right? The shape that houses are put into has a meaning behind it. There's a reason that they're shaped the way they are. There's, you know, what you identify as your house, the meaning behind home, like you were saying, the things inside the house, why you have these things, all the wallpaper, the painting, the colors, all these things are symbolically important to you. And then also that emotional engagement of what your home was like, your families, things like that, on and on, right? So the dream, you know, it has all that information and says, well, what story am I trying to convey to you? And then it says, okay, I can modify, I can use the house as like a jumping point, but I can modify it slightly to convey a different message to you, you know? So like, say I'm watching TV, you know, and this like beautiful actress is on the TV or something, you know, and I'm like, okay. And I go to sleep and suddenly I'm dreaming of her, you know, it's like, well, is that random noise? I don't believe it is, because what I think is happening is the dream is using something that is emotionally responsive to me to convey a story. So it picks that image of the actress and all the things associated that I know about that actress, and then puts it in the dream space to say, here's a way to relate to me to convey a very important message that I'm trying to understand, you know. And sometimes like it's almost like the message gets confused, you know, because like, let's be real here, you know, it hasn't been long since modernism has been around, you know, like modern thinking and scientific methods and stuff like that. It hasn't been long in the human history that those things have really been in
Yeah, we've
place.
really progressed over the last couple 100 years for sure.
Yeah, we've progressed in one way and really de-evolved in another,
We've
right?
evolved with our connection to nature, and I think some of the more,
Spirituality.
yeah, like the more connectiveness to who we are and like the earth and things like that. But I think maybe, I don't know, who knows? Maybe we need to find that balance, or maybe we're just evolving into something completely different.
Uh-oh.
Mike got stuck in time.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you start talking about
Did you do,
society
did you
today.
not? Am I
It
still
gets you.
here? What had
Yeah,
happened?
my camera working?
No, your camera's not on. If you know, sorry, folks, we got a little cut out there, but we're back. Lee is back. Yeah, that was weird. I don't know. My new computer has cut out a couple times like this. I think that's the last time this did this. We did like had to do like a tart part part two, and it just really pisses me off. So I gotta call Apple when we're done with
It's the
this.
aliens.
Yeah, it's the aliens.
You talk something, they come and shut you out.
It's the archons.
But so where we're, I think we were talking about memory and lucid dreaming when we cut out.
Yeah, so
So you were talking a bit about like seeing something and then there's like an emotional connection to it, and then from there, you know, it plays out in your dreams.
right, yeah. So, you know, I was just applying that essentially the randomness that mainstream, what I'll call mainstream scientists, or sleep, you know, scientists think of when they think of randomness in dreams and how they're random completely is essentially they credit that by saying, oh, well, you just dream of random shit throughout the day, you know, and that's what makes your dream up. But that's not, if anybody really pays attention to their dreams, they realize pretty quickly that that's not the case. Like, these are very complex stories. They're very time, they're very time aligned. So like, it's like a perfect movie. I've had dreams where, you know, I'll hear one instance is I heard like an alarm clock going off, you know, in my dream, and I'm like, where the fuck is the alarm clock, you know? And I'm looking for the alarm clock, and I as soon as I get to shut off the alarm, I wake up at that instant, and then after I wake up, my alarm goes off like a second after that, you know? And it's like my dream knew exactly when my alarm clock was going to go off because I set it in the morning. It kept time of like, you know, when I was going to wake up, so it had real time dream memory of time, you know, it was setting up the
It's kind of like
dream. And then it,
precognition, right?
yeah, you could say it that, but I mean, one or the other, right? Like, well, there's m many explanations. It's like one precognition type dream, right? Where I knew that my alarm clock was going to off, or at this time I dreamed it anyways, and then set it up. Number two, the dream kept time, and had this very intricate story about what all these processes were going to be when I was going to finally get to the alarm clock, you know, and then push the button and then wake myself up, and then the alarm clock would go off. And I forget the third one. The third one was a dream. What we're talking about, memory, is as soon as the moment that I woke up from my alarm clock going off, the memory was created that I had this dream experience, right? It is just like instantly fabricated to match what was happening in waking reality. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a new thing for me, is like this dream memory thing, and like, what is memory, and where, how does that get, like, how does time and all this stuff relate to memory? It's kind of like a new thing that I'm playing with. I don't have the answers to, you know.
Yeah, but I have memories of some old dreams, like I can remember them exactly. So it's almost like the same as having a memory as a child. Like, I remember some things as an infant. They're very vague.
Yeah.
And then I'll explain, like, I have this one memory of me being changed on a pool table. So I must have been 2 years old or something. And I tell my mom, she's like, yeah, that happened. We were at camp. I barely remember it. But then at the same time, I have memories of dreams that are, they've never diminished. So again, yeah. That's something weird going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, as well as like false memories on going to sleep, that is common for me. So I'll be in like hypnagogia, kind of like the in-between state between waking and sleeping, kind of coming in and out of sleep. And suddenly I'll have these memories of things that I never did, you know? And it's almost like taking over my brain to the point that I'm like forgetting that I didn't do them and did them. And it's like I get really confused, you know? I'm like, I didn't do that, like, no, you know,
right?
And it's like resisting almost this implant of a memory that never occurred, you know, or maybe it did and I don't know, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like so the memory thing, you know, is confusing by itself, and applying that to dreams, it's like, oh my god, like I have no idea what's going on. And but I know for certain that this isn't just random noise, you know, like this,
right,
like these memories seem well developed and intentionally almost implanted into your consciousness, you know, for very specific reasons. What I was getting at is, for I think we mentioned something about history and like how we've changed a lot, and what I was getting at is like we've really de-evolved in the sense that we no longer have this symbolic language anymore. We don't really listen to, you people call that nature, you know, nature expresses itself through symbolic language, and
it's just emojis now.
Yeah. Yeah, those are symbolic too, right? we really digressed, and in our advancement we take literal interpretations of things, you know, and the scientific method really enforces that. However, you know, I was very science-based in my past, but the anecdotal, you know, stuff is very important too. It's the experience, and also kind of having this art form that you can understand dreams through a language. And so it really is like relearning a language that's forgotten through time, in trying to have dialogue with dreams and the world, you know.
Right.
But if you really, you know, I think I was on last time, I was like, you gotta, you know, like have your listeners start studying symbols, you know.
Right.
And I really give a reason behind that, and the reason is because I think when you start diving into symbols and what symbols really are, you start approaching that language, and you start really, it's like going to another culture, you know, like if you go to say India and you want to learn the language, you know, it starts really opening up to a different way of thinking, a mode of thinking that you never really really dabbled in before.
I think language is directly tied to consciousness in some regards. Oh, yeah. I think it does alter your consciousness somewhat, for sure.
Arrival is a great example of that, right?
Oh yeah.
With the aliens, phenomenal. It's like, how would aliens communicate to us? Well, one method would be symbols, right? And memory. And so it kind of ties the two together. It's like symbols are actually memory, and memory isn't something that is time based or anything like that. So,
right.
You know, there's, I don't know the evidence supports that, but however, the movie does a really good job in exploring the idea and saying, this is a possibility, you know.
It's probably one of the better recent ones in terms of like having a good story and plot and everything like that, for sure.
Yeah.
At what point do you think we lost this connection to our dreams?
I don't know. It seems very recent, you know, in the last few hundred years, I think. I mean, there was a huge like occult and movement, you know, that in Europe. So that seemed to be like the, and Jung was part of that, I think, right? And he kind of was trying to re-grasp the symbolic language and reconnect people to it. And I think the occult movement would kind of was that way too. It's like, oh, there's hidden knowledge in symbols, and I really desire to learn that. And people attribute that to occultism, right? But really, I think occultism is just essentially people trying to re-engage with that symbolic language. But I think any time that we see advancements in technology and things like that, we start kind of losing our grasp on symbolic language, the more nature-based things, right? The more these are organic objects, right? They're like, symbols are organic. They're alive in the sense that like they change, and the things that they represent change constantly. So like a human being is a symbol, right? I see you guys and I think, oh, I know you guys, right? But really, you're constantly changing. You know, your ideas are completely, they may be vastly different than the last time we even talked, and mine too. But my representation of you is like what I know about you from the past, how I feel about you guys, and then like what you look like, you know, and I generate an image based on that, not just visual, but, you know, the image right. that encompasses all that. But really, that's the only way that I can communicate to you, you know, is through the symbol, which is you. But really, like, there's so much depth to that that I'll never understand, because it's constantly changing, you know.
Right.
And so that's, every symbol is that way. Like, a letter is a symbol that in
right.
our language, you know, written language is a symbol. So, like, you imagine that every word that you've ever written actually is a really poor representation of actually what those letters and that response that the person that reads it is going to feel, and it's going to affect them, you know. So it's like, it's very depth, you know, deep. These things are very deep.
Yeah, and I like it, and I like the idea of symbolism and like the way you and I have kind of gone back and forth and discussed it offline and stuff, and I like your ideas on it too. But yeah, I mean, in terms of, let's pivot now towards like the UAP, UFO type stuff. And you've been on the show. We did a whole episode where you discussed, you had a sighting with one of your friends when you were a lot younger. And then you discussed, you know, you were stationed on the USS Nimitz, which is one of the aircraft carriers that had one of those, you know, the Tic Tac sighting in 2004. You weren't on the ship then, but, you know, we were just discussing like the culture and how people talk about these things on these ships. And then you were later stationed in Virginia, where you did have a sighting on one of the bases, and you described it as some sort of large sky jellyfish trash bag looking thing. I mean, it just, you know, that's what I remember you describing it as. But now when you look at like the news, and it's all over the place, I mean, it's all over Twitter, it's all over the news, it's everywhere right now. It's, how do you think about, like, do you think that we're turning a corner in terms of the way we think about these things, and more people are open to the idea now? So maybe we'll at least get to the bottom of what some of these things might be, or at least investigate them deeper.
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think that people will really change. You know, it just from what I saw from the before the media really got a hold of it, right? We had some articles, we had some video footage, we had people coming out, like the pilots and stuff coming out, and we had people that were such deniers of all that information. It's like, holy crap, dude, like, way to double down, you know, on.
Right. That's still going on, too. There's people that are, there's a few skeptics that are really pushing hard to, like, say that everybody else is an idiot for even looking into this thing.
Yeah, it's a joke. You know, it's, those people are always going to exist. And I think they actually, let's be truthful here. Let's be honest. The only thing that the majority of people are interested in is what is the utility of this stuff, right? Because we're so consumer based and we're so like kind of logic based, you know, even though like most people don't really have a very good basic idea of what logic and reason is. We're so into that, you know, these facts, right? That if anything disrupts that in any such way, we'll try to get rid of it as fast as we possibly can. And if it doesn't align with that too, and if there's no usefulness to it, right, then we will throw it out because we got a job to do, we got other shit we got to do, you know. So really it's just entertainment at that point, right? There's no real like utility to it for these people. So they're just like, oh, this is entertainment. And then as soon as the entertainment's gone, you know, it's like, whatever, you know,
right.
It's gone.
Well, look,
it doesn't change their lives.
I think I'm okay with like skepticism or like, oh, you know, like, let's do more research or let's look at this deeper, you know, like stuff like that. But you do have these like skeptics that are, so most of them aren't even scientists. They're just hobbyists, almost like how people look into UFOs. It's the same thing. It's just on the other spectrum. And they're writing books and they're writing blogs. And a lot of them aren't using logic and reason either. So if they want to say, oh, well, these people aren't going through all the steps like Occam's razor to figure out what this thing is, they're not doing the same thing on the other end of things either. They're not looking at these things objectively. They're coming at it from a completely skeptical standpoint where they've already decided that that couldn't possibly exist. So they're going to do everything in their power to figure out, you know, how can they present their idea of that so that they'll convince all the people.
Right. Yeah. I think it really comes down to like, well, I know something, you know, and you're wrong, you know, and it's on both sides, you know, it's like, I know aliens exist, period, you know, and it's like, I know this and I have to tell everybody. So they're like, on the same page as me, you know, they get something from that, you know.
Well, it's like the people are like, these aliens are from this planet. No, you don't know that. You know, we don't even know exactly what these things are. They could be from a different dimension. It could be some super, super advanced technology. I'm not saying all of it or some of it. I'm just saying there's some things that could be some things. There's other things that could be other things. But then people generalize these things on both sides and say it's for sure not this or it's for sure this. And it's like, I think we need more people in the middle saying, well, let's just look at this thing deeper, right?
Yeah. Well, there's like, you know, a good example of what is happening, I think, is religion. There's religions, you know, where pretty small groups of people, they're pretty passive, you know, they're just like, hey, if you want to believe in what we believe in, that's cool, you know, come hang out with us, you know. But then there's like, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually, like, they're like, no, you have to believe this shit. We'll destroy like all your history and kill you if you don't believe in what we believe in, you know? And then they're like, and that's what everybody hates about religion essentially, is they don't hate religion itself. They hate groupthink that causes people to get killed.
Yeah. It's
and, like,
power
destroy their
corrupts,
lives.
Right. It's like,
well, that's what the man put into it. You know, it's
right.
We always corrupt and wreck good things.
But I agree with you. Then, like, the general idea behind it is not a bad, you know, like you want to be a better person. You want to, you know, evolve your consciousness and your ideas and help people around you and just be a generally better person. So I think at that, at its core is a good thing. But then you get enough people together, it becomes a power dynamic and a power structure, and then people are you know, biting for who can control this person or, you know, take it. So it is a thing like that. But like, how do you like watching the news now, though, like based on having your experiences, like how do you feel? Do you feel like a little validated? Do you feel like maybe we will get some sort of answers on what these things might be or what they are?
No, I just laugh at it, dude.
Yeah, we were just talking about this when
like,
we shut off.
I'm like, you're a freaking joke, dude. You're like, it's like, okay, I experienced something, you know. Other people saw it with me. I'm not hallucinating these things. You know, like, these people are random, seemingly random people that work in the military, you know, and saw the same thing. It's like, okay, like, what do you want from us? You know, like, we saw it. It's real, you know, like, whatever. Right. And so I don't really at that point, it's like, okay, you know, you want to disprove me? Okay, you know, I don't care, because, like, it doesn't affect what happened to me. And, like, if you want to prove it, that's fine too, I guess, you know, but it's, like, it happened. I don't care at that point. It's like, I don't care.
Well, you're a smart dude, and you think pretty deeply. Obviously, you and I talk a lot. Do you think that, like, I don't know. I guess I get what you're saying. Like, you don't care what anybody else has to say because you've experienced this thing. You know it's real. Yeah. But what I'm saying is like, when you think deeply about it, does it change the fact that, like, so you, do you care that other people believe that it's real? I guess is what I'm saying. Or you're just saying that just because you've experienced it and you believe it's real, you don't need anybody else's validation. But I guess, how do we get to that next level where are you even curious what they might be or what it might be? Or
I don't know. You know, it goes back to me being an introvert, you know, like it, we have to go back to like who really is an introvert and who's an extrovert. Jung, you know, created these terms, introvert, extrovert, and essentially an introvert is somebody that finds meaning internally, right? They deeply go down inside. They find meaning from the experiences from internally, right?
Right.
Extrovert is they find meaning from things that happen externally to them, like other people's opinions and like beauty of nature and things like that. You know, that's an extrovert kind of stuff. It's not so much about like who wants to stay inside, who wants to go outside, right? Or right. Who doesn't like talking to people, etc. So like me, I'm a very strong introvert. I find meaning by my own personal experiences. I don't really need external validation to have that meaning. So, but some people, you know, they're extroverts, you know, but I really don't understand that because I'm an introvert, you know. But I can understand that they need that, you know, but it doesn't really affect me, you know. So it's like if 1,000 people said they saw a UFO and one person said they saw a UFO, it doesn't really matter to me. What really matters to me is me experiencing it personally. So that I have experienced it is the most important part to me. What helps me is validation from other people, you know. I'm confused. Like if it was by myself and I saw an UFO, I'd be like, wow, that's crazy. I saw that. But for whatever reason, I've always had somebody with me. Right. So right. It's like, oh, okay. My friend saw it too. Okay. You know, that's right. Cool.
Yeah. That's nice to let you know that there's actually somebody else that experienced it.
I'm like, oh, okay. My friend saw it. Obviously I'm not just crazy, you know, but if I just saw it myself, I would feel, you know, I'd be like, oh, I had that experience. That experience is real. But it would change like the dynamic of it. So I've had UFO alien experiences in my dreams, which most people I think would, you know, attribute to abductions. They were 100% abduction type dreams, right? But I don't go about like telling people, oh yeah, I saw aliens, you know, and all this stuff. I go, oh, that's my personal experience. However I feel about that is important to me, you know, nobody else saw it with me. So it's personal, you know? Mm. So I just kind of, I'm like, okay. But, you know,
I think you hit something interesting though there, which is that, I mean, I wrote a blog about like, epistemology and UFOs, like how do we know what we know? And in there I was talking about how like we build these myths. You were talking about like Jung and UFOs and stuff. And we build these myths modern day, which is like we build these ideas and mythologies around this topic where nobody even has any evidence for this stuff. This is just things that they speculate or think, or they deduct certain things that, you know, whatever. But until you experience something truly weird, you don't really understand. And last year on my dad's birthday, I was at his house and we were in his backyard and there was this massive orange orb, and by the time I picked up my phone, I actually pulled out my star chart. I didn't even pick up my camera. Most people would think camera. I pulled out the star chart to make sure it wasn't like a star or like a planet, which it wasn't, and I kind of knew that, but I by the time I went up, this thing's already gone. And the rest of the night my dad and I were just like, that's so weird, that was just so bizarre, you know. Like I wasn't thinking like, I got to go online. We got to do an episode. And we saw a UFO from this planet. And, you know, like it wasn't anything. And I understand that, you know, why some people do that. And, you know, there are people out there trying to make money and trying to, you know, make a living off this thing. But at the same time, it's like, I think if we're really being honest with ourselves, the stories and the speculations and the mythologies, they're just weighing us down to a certain point, you know. And I equated it to like the Greek gods. Like the Greek gods to the Greeks were real. This Zeus, you know, Zeus, oh, it's thunder, you know, there's lightning and thunder, it's Zeus, you know, they believed that. But it wasn't really there. That's just a perception that they had at the time, right? So I'm not saying that that's the same thing, because we do have some physical evidence, obviously, but I'm just making the point that, like, when you create these mythologies and you assign certain properties and different things to things, I think you're actually deducting from trying to find the actual truth or what that might mean. And you hit it on another point, which was, what does it mean to you personally? Like, what does that symbolism mean to you? And you were talking about UAPs and UFOs and dreams and aliens and stuff like that. I've had one lucid dream where I'm laying in like a red desert. I don't know if it's in the desert Mars. Or the Mars or something. And there's just like a classic disc to my left, like a few hundred yards away, just hovering over. And I'm just like laying there flat on the ground. And I don't know what that means. I still don't know what it means, but
was Elon holding your hand?
Yeah, no, but it just to this day, I still think about that. It was just very bizarre. And there was some sort of symbolism happening there. I still haven't figured it out. Maybe I will in the future. Maybe it'll mean something to me in the future, but just that idea of that happening. I mean, so have you ever had an experience like that in dreaming or lucid dreaming where you experience not necessarily like an entity or like a sleep paralysis or like an abduction type thing, but more of like an actual craft or something like that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have had plenty in my years of alien UFOs, et cetera. Like, you know, people get abducted in stories and they have like sexual encounters with aliens and stuff like that. You know, that happened to me. That's pretty common in sleep paralysis, actually. It's like people getting kind of raped, actually, in sleep paralysis. So I had, you know, I was laying in bed, had sleep paralysis, and then next thing I know, I think there was maybe like three aliens pretty much kind of gangbanging me. But, you know, I knew what sleep paralysis is like, and I knew that I really couldn't do much about it. So I was just like, okay, you know, this is what's happening. And I was just like, all right. And they were like pulling me up into the sky in the dream. And I woke up from that. And I was like, okay, you know, that happened. What does that mean? But I didn't really like freak out about it and be like, oh my God, I was raped by an alien, you know?
But you did have sleep paralysis issues with other entities where it was more, it wasn't really related to what you're talking about. It was more just like these dark entities by your bed or whatever that.
Yeah. I had gray, this gray alien chilling next to my bed for months. And it was, you know, I was like trying to communicate to it. I was like, okay, you know, I don't know what this thing is, if it's some type of thing from my psyche or whatever, you know? So I'm like, I want to talk to it. So I tried to like, I went into its like as far as close as I could to its face, and like, cause it was like trying to speak to me, and I was like trying to like get in there, and I couldn't understand the damn thing it was saying to me. And eventually it disappeared. It like, it was like these series of dreams. I had this like black orb next to my bed that my mom gave me. It's like it's a rock, you know?
Yeah.
And I put it next to my bed because like I had a dream years and years ago before I even got this orb thing from my mom about essentially the same thing. And it was like sucking dark entities into it. So I'm not interested in crystals or anything like that. And my mom isn't either, but she happened to go to Arizona and to this like crystal show, you know, like those big rock shows or whatever.
Yeah.
And she found this orb and she's like, maybe Lee would like that, you know? So she brought it back to me and I was like, thanks mom. I had a dream about this thing, you know? And she's like, really? I'm like, yeah. So I was like, maybe it has ports. Anyways, fast forward, the alien dude in my dream took it. He like ran off. Like, so I came out of, you know, I woke up in my dream. I was lucid. I moved out of my body, right? And I look over in the corner where the orb is and it's gone. And I'm like, the fuck, where'd my orb go? And so I walked over to the door and my door was open and the alien dude had took off with it. So I don't know what that was about, but
didn't you have one too, like the one, I think one of the first episodes we had you on where you were talking about how you got rid of sleep paralysis and you actually like swallowed this entity or something like that?
Yeah, it's a black shadow creature thing that looked a lot like the Grim Reaper. And, you know, oddly, if you go through like the historical references to Grim Reaper and why people see Grim Reaper as it is, it becomes very dreamlike too. You know, it's during a time of pandemics too, so you know, so it's interesting. But they essentially, I just swallowed this thing, and I didn't know it really why I even ate it. You know, I was like, it was just like a natural thing that I did. And if it's a great, I mean, people start looking into the stuff, they'll find it really interesting, because I found people that described exactly the same thing as me. They ate the shadow creature, and they're not, they don't know me. They never read my shit. You know, it's like historical. It's before I was even born, some of them. I mean, there's a whole entire like culture in Africa that they're called like soul eaters. They eat spirits, and that's how they use them, you know. And then South America, if you go into indigenous tribes there with ayahuasca, they eat what they call darts, and they store it in the phlegm of their stomach, and that's how they gain special powers, that they eat the spirits themselves, and then they store them in their stomach. So, you know, I don't know, you know, like what that's all about, but it seems like it's a pretty natural thing that people do for some reason, and that's now they gain magical powers, right. You know.
So like, so now we've talked about your experiences that you've had with, you know, UFOs and creatures in your dreams, and obviously you've had real, you know, waking consciousness experiences. What would you say is the main difference, other than being fully conscious, for like the other ones? Like, what was there? Did it have some sort of similar feeling, or like an archetype thing happening, or was it something completely different?
No, I think they're very relatable, in the sense that you know, you say you're in the dream, you wake up, and it's like, who do you tell, you know, that you had this experience? No one's really going to believe you, really, you know. So you really don't talk about it, and then there's no real place to talk about it. The same thing seems to happen commonly with alien or UFO encounters. You know, you have this experience, and then you're like, okay, what do I do with this? And eventually you kind of just stop talking about it, you know. Both of my experiences, I stopped talking about it. I didn't really talk to people about it after the experience. And if I talked to those people about it, you know, they probably hadn't really talked about it either. It's just, it's almost so weird and bizarre that you're just like, I don't know what to do with this. So I just put it away into something that doesn't exist. It's like, you know, I think it's pretty common for people to have waking hallucinations too, like more so than we'd really think. I definitely have some weird things that happened to me throughout my life. You know, you're like, did I see something there? Or, you know, what was that? And we just kind of ignore it, you know, because it doesn't really fit into the model of what we want to happen, you know, and we don't want people to think we're weird or anything. So we just kind of put it away. There's a good book called Hallucinations. And the author, he goes through retirement homes, and he's talking to a lot of retirement home people, you know, older folks, and it's very common that old people hallucinate all the time. They talk to people that aren't there. They, you know, have full on conversations with people, and they really don't talk to people or even their family. They don't talk, they don't mention to their family, because they don't want to be thought as weird and, you know, crazy. They don't want to be thought crazy, and they don't want meds increased and all this other stuff, you know? And so they just keep it to themselves. But he went in there, and I guess he convinced enough people to be open about it. You know, he's a doctor, and he showed that, I think he had statistics in there. It was a very high percentage of people to have these things. So it's actually really common for people to experience things that they can't make sense of, even all throughout life. I mean, like, children have imaginary friends, you know?
Right.
And then they grow out of it, and parents are like, oh yeah, imaginary friend, it was so fun, you know? It's like, what the hell? Like,
I mean, I wonder if there's some connection to that between like early stages of life and the very later stages of life, in the sense that you don't have the same structure, priorities, or responsibilities that you do later in your life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you get older, you're essentially, you start having dementia, right? It's very common for people to have dementia. And so the default mode network, when you get older, breaks down, and that's what really causes dementia. Even in Alzheimer's, like, it's attributed to default mode network shutdown through this plaque buildup in the brain, right? Essentially, your brain just doesn't work the same way. And I would assume that when you're a child, your default mode network is obviously not well developed or anything like that, so the brain is operating in an abnormal state, right? So it would be common for people to have hallucinations during that time, because essentially, like, you're a child and you're kind of like naturally having taken hallucinogens, right? Your like default mode network is kind of almost to the state naturally that it would be when you would be on hallucinogens.
Yeah, you're talking about like those graphs where they show your brain connections prior and after, yeah. You know, like that, those graphs that they show. Yeah, that makes sense.
So old people, you know, older people that have dementia, they essentially are doing the same thing. Their default mode network is a mess. They're hallucinating things that aren't supposedly there. And, you know, there you go. And then, but like in normal waking, you know, normal life, when we're all together and everything, we take psychedelics and we're like, oh my God, I saw, you know, all this crazy shit. And it's like, yeah, like old people see that all the time. And so do kids, you know?
Right.
It's like, we're not in that mind state anymore because we've got our brain working and functioning supposedly how it's supposed to be, right? And
yeah, I mean, Ken Kesey actually directly correlated taking LSD with being a child and the way you see things. And
yeah, so yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. So let's wrap it up here. We'll do a short Patreon. But yeah, we really appreciate you coming on, obviously, and congrats on the book. It's
thanks.
It's, it's, you did a great job, and everybody should go check it out. I have the link down below the video and the information if you're listening on an audio platform, and buy his book. It's you know, it's on Kindle. There's also, was there paperback too?
Yeah,
paperback.
Making an audio book of it too. So
nice.
If you don't like reading, that'll be out soon.
Yeah.
And
but yeah, check it out. Super, super interesting. And shout out to Inner Traditions too. I like, a lot of the books they produce. And, yeah, man, thank you so much for coming back on. Obviously, you're, a good friend, and,
thanks.
You've set the record now. You've been on like 7 times. So,
thanks,
but we'll have you on again in the future. And we're obviously, we don't want to talk too much about it yet, but we're also doing another project with you and a few other people. We look forward to doing something with that. And, before we head on over or out of here, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/mindescapepodcast for just $2 a month. You'll get exclusive guest episodes and segments. We're about to record one right now with Lee. We just did one with Lee not that long ago where he goes through steps on how to do, you know, how to get into the lucid dream, state. So go check that out if you have not already. And, we have a bunch of other stuff on there as well. So, one more thing, head on over to indrasweb.org. This is the social media platform we created to connect open minds. So whether you're hypothesizing, theorizing, or just speculating, it's a perfect place to do that. And yeah, a bunch of different topics, a lot of stuff we talk about on the show, metaphysics, all that kind of stuff. So, well, listen, Lee, thanks again. And yeah, we'll catch everybody next time. We love everybody. Stay safe out there, and peace.
Cheers.